Vishnu Sahasranama, name 853, is Yogi. The name Yoga has already come in Vishnu Sahasranama. Yoga is a name of the Supreme Lord. Also Yogi, another name that's come, similar name already comes, Sada Yogi, comes in Vishnu Sahasranama, means one who is always a yogi. The word yogi has been known and understood commonly. Everyone knows the meaning of the word, at least the conventional or superficial meaning of the word. In India, everyone's known for generations, practically since time immemorial. Yogis have been part of the culture since time immemorial. Generally in India, if we think of yogi, we think of a wizened man with a beard, maybe with some mystic powers. We don't see mystic powers much nowadays. It used to be that they had. Nowadays, if you think of a yogi, the stereotype is Ramdev Baba. We see his bearded, smiling face, smiling out at us from Patanjali shops everywhere, all over the country. The word yogi is also well known in English language and probably many other Western languages also. People think of yogi. Yeah, similar. Thin man. Actually, a lot of women do yoga in the West. It's physical yoga, probably more than do men. Yeah, they tend to think of someone who's thin and muscular and very agile, and they're very fit and do all these exercises, and probably a vegetarian or a vegan. So there's some idea of what the word yogi is. There are many kinds of yogis. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna speaks about karma yogis, jnana yogis, dhyana yogis, and ultimately bhakti yogis. So there are many, many kinds of yogis. But Krishna is the original and the best, and he is the one upon whose favor all yogis depend. And especially we're thinking about the yogis who try to acquire mystic powers so they can get them from Krishna. So Krishna, if we say yogi, the word really refers to Krishna in the full sense of the term. But Krishna doesn't have a beard. He doesn't do exercises on a yoga mat. He's naturally endowed with all the attributes that people try to acquire from practicing yoga. Mostly nowadays people do it for physical health, and especially in the West. At least in India there's still some idea, maybe in the West also, there's among some practitioners of yoga exercises, there's some idea that it's ultimately meant for a spiritual goal. Yoga means that, actually. The yuj, the root is yuj, which means to join, to link up together. Although in the beginning of the Patanjali Yoga Sutras, the definition of yoga is given as yoga chitta vritti nirodha, not linking up, but stopping the consciousness altogether. Or to be more precise, the fluctuations, the peregrinations, the activities of the consciousness. But generally yoga is understood to mean joining together, and that is the sense in which it's used in Bhagavad Gita, which is known as a yoga shastra. Parashara Bhatta gives the interpretation of this name. he is endowed with superhuman powers. Of course, he's superhuman. He's Krishna. He's God. Previous to this, in the last few names, we've been discussing how the Supreme Lord has in full all the mystic opulences which certain kind of yogi aspires to attain. They're conflicting, many of them, just like Anu, to be extremely light, anima, and mahima. Sorry, anima means to be very small, and mahima means to be huge. And then we have Krisha and Sthula, the names in Vishnu Sahasranam, which correspond to the Laghima being extremely light, and Prapti. So these are not qualities which go together. If we say, oh, that person's very small, he's also very big. Doesn't seem to make sense. But Krishna has the unique quality, unique. No one else has this. No yogi can get this quality of bringing together yoga in a harmonious combination, attributes that don't go together. Just like a yogi can be the smallest of the small, and he can also assume a large form, but he can't do both things at the same time. Krishna can and does all the time. And of course, Krishna has all these qualities in full. No one can have them in full except him. So he has all these qualities. They all coexist in him. They're all combined in him. Yoga means combination. I'm going to make my own comment on here, which isn't given by any of the previous commentators, concerning that he combines things which are of different natures. We can see also the jiva, who is spiritual by nature, becomes combined with the material energy. They're different natures. It's something like combining oil and water. They don't really go together. Krishna speaks about this in Bhagavad Gita. Purusha prakriti stohi bhunte prakriti jangunam. The purusha, or the jiva, who is by nature transcendent to the modes of nature, is stuck in material nature. Why? Because he wants to enjoy the material nature. So that's unnatural for the jiva, but Krishna makes it possible. Another unlikely combination, and this statement could arise anger in some, or could give rise to jokes among others, that we see that among humans, male and female nature, they're so different. That, and often we see that men can't understand women, women can't understand men, but somehow they come together. Why? Bhunkte prakriti jan gunan. Because they come together with the idea of enjoying the material world. I'm going to give a few examples from Srimad Bhagavatam of Krishna being addressed as Mahayogi, great yogi. Uttara, she's afraid Ashwatthama is going to destroy the embryo in her womb, so she prays to Krishna. Pahi, pahi, mahayogin, deva, deva, jagatpate. Protect, protect, protect me, she's saying. You're the mahayogi. You're the god of the gods, the lord of the universe. So she's calling out to him, even though the Pandavas are present, but she's calling out for Krishna. Kapila is referred to in the Bhagavatam as Mahayogi because he practiced that form of mystic yoga to show what it means to be a yogi. Not that he was after getting siddhis, but he got them anyway. He's the Supreme Lord himself. Nalakuvara and Manigriva, after being released by Krishna from their incarceration in bodies of trees, address Krishna, 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 Mahayogin. Mother Surabhi, who at the request of Indradev, comes before Krishna to accompany Indra as he comes to beg forgiveness for having flooded Vrindavan. She says the same thing to Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Mahayogin. The Vidyadhara Sudarshana, who was in a snake body due to being cursed after being freed from the curse by the touch of Krishna's lotus, one of his two lotus feet. He also addressed Krishna as Mahayogin. Kunti also addresses Krishna, or refers to Krishna, calls out to Krishna, 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 Mahayogin. Vasudeva says the same thing, Krishna, Krishna, Mahayogin. Uddhava, more than once, refers to Krishna as Mahayogin. So it's well known. It's among devotees who address Krishna, we find in Bhagavatam, he's again and again addressed as Mahayogi. They understand he's not an ordinary person. And notice that they address him as Mahayogi. Here we're discussing the name of Vishnu Sahasranam, Yogi. All right, he's a yogi. There are so many yogis, but Mahayogi means he's above the category of ordinary yogis. In Chaitanya Upanishad, Lord Chaitanya is referred to as Mahayogi. Maha, of course, means great. And in Chaitanya Bhagavat, Anantadev is referred to as Adideva Mahayogi. Others in Bhagavatam are also called Mahayogi. Shukadev, for instance, is referred to as Mahayogi. And even Maya Dhanava, who's not a godly person, although he did get the favor of Arjuna, but basically he's in the demoniac category, but he's a Mahayogi. For that matter, although he's not referred to as such, we could say Hiranyakashipu is a great yogi for the austerities that he acquired and the mystic adverse side effects of his austerities practically forced Lord Brahma to give Hiranyakashipu various boons. So when we say yogi, it's a name that could refer to others apart from Krishna. And there are names like that. So we just had, for instance, Guna Brit, one who has qualities. But when we refer to Krishna as Guna Brit, or when we refer to Krishna as yogi, it means not like someone else who has qualities or someone else who practices or is adept or perfect in yoga, but who is the topmost in that category, far, far ahead of anyone else. Although some names, they are unique to Krishna. Vishnu, it's Vishnu Sahasranama. Vishvam Vishnu, the first two names. He is the universe. No one else can say that. He's Vishnu, he's all-pervading. Shankaracharya gives the interpretation that yogi can also mean he who is attained through knowledge, jnana. This is particularly, this interpretation will be particularly appreciated by those in the Advaita school, who are sometimes called Jnana Yogis. They're on the Jnana Marga. The Vaishnava understanding is that he, Bhaktya Mama Vijanati, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, I can be fully known by bhakti. Only by bhakti can Krishna be attained. But of course, the Advaitins, they have a different outlook. They don't want to attain Krishna per se, even though commenting on Vishnu Sahasranam, their whole idea of Vishnu is that he's a... Anyway. In the Vaishnava system, Bhakti Yoga, or in the Sri Vaishnava system, by Bhakti Yoga or by Prapatti, fully surrendering to him, Jnana, Karma, they can be accessories, but they're not essential. Of course, we have in Bhagavad Gita, referring to Paramatma, Jnanam, Gyeyam, Jnanagamyam. He is knowledge, he is the object of knowledge, and he is attainable by knowledge. So that's for Paramatma, not for Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Radha Krishna Shastri, another commentator, explains the term yoga as the process by which the mind is drawn toward it. One tries to bring the mind to him. Especially the yogi, as to this Radha Krishna Shastri describes it, that the tendency of the mind is to wander away. But the yogi has to bring the mind back to meditation on Vishnu. So he, yogi, Radha Krishna Shastri is explaining, he is attained by the process of yoga, by control of the mind and the senses. But again, those on the pure devotional path would say controlling the mind and the senses is not central to becoming Krishna conscious. So it's not, it is essential. One has to control the mind and senses to be fully Krishna conscious, but it's the attempt to control the mind and the senses is not the central thrust of the devotional process. Satyadeva Vashishta, as usual, commenting in terms of the Supreme Lord's actions as seen within the mundane universe, says that yogi means he alone has the ability to keep everything in the universe together. I wish the atheistic scientists would just realize this. What keeps everything together? They'll say, well, it's natural forces and different energies and gravitation and this and that. And it's his power. It's under his control. Shankaracharya gives another understanding of this name yogi, he who is in complete control of his own self. So this can refer to a perfect yogi who's in complete control of himself. He's controlled his mind and his senses. But actually, even the yogis, they're not in complete control of this. You can control your mind and your senses, but still, we're controlled by Krishna ultimately. But certainly Krishna, he is in control of his mind and himself, which are non-different from him. If he wasn't, then there wouldn't be any order anywhere in the universe, nothing. Yoga means to bring together. Krishna Datta Bharadvaj gives the understanding that he unites the devotees with that which they desire. And of course the yogis desire to unite with Krishna in devotional service. Baladev Vidyabhushan, in the previous name, he described that he is called Katita, that's the previous name, because he is spoken of as being, he's celebrated for being Bharabhrit, one who takes the burden. And then, commenting on the previous name, Baladev said, how can a single person be able to maintain unlimited devotees? And then he said, that will be explained next. So here we are, that's the next name, Yogi. Yogi, he is endowed with the quality of eternally possessing the attribute of bringing his wishes into reality. And Baladev Vidyabhushan quotes from Brahmanda Purana, from the 108 names of Krishna. One of his names is Satya Sankalpa, means whatever he decides, whatever he desires, will surely come to pass. So, he can do as he likes. He can maintain all of his devotees. Yoga kshemam vahami aham, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. He maintains his devotees, both in their immediate temporal needs and in their process of spiritual progress. So that's Baladev Vidyabhushan's explanation, linking together three names in a row. They're in the Bharabhrit, he maintains his devotees. Katita, he's celebrated for doing so. How can he do so? Because he's yogi. He can do whatever he likes. He has the power. By deep understanding of the Sanskrit, various commentators have brought out various reasons, various interpretations of this name. Here we have one, that yoga means to have a kavacha. Kavacha means just like armor, to protect the body, or a shield or something. No, it's armor. So a yogi is one who wears armor. And of course Krishna. Conventionally going to fighting, he may put on armor, though he doesn't need to. But he gives his mercy to the living being, the devotee who takes the form, just like of his armor, just like his shield, his bow, his disc weapon. They're all personalities who take those forms to serve him. And this way, he is known as yogi. Another meaning, which is not, well, somewhat unconventional, different to the other meanings. Sama, Dhamma, Bhed, Danda. These are the four methods of niti that are recommended by kings or leaders to diplomacy, to keep their population or their, well, especially their rivals or their opponents, or maybe some troublesome citizens, to keep them in line, to keep them under control. So, sama means pacification. Dhamma means to offer them some sops. Just behave yourself, just be nice, I'll do something good for you. Divide and rule. And if none of them work, smash them. These are the four systems. Vishnu is called yogi because he knows fully all the means of doing this. Then, in Ashtanga Yoga, there is Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, Samadhi. The Ashtanga means eight limbs or eight stages of yoga. So the Yama means the Yama and Niyama means the rules, the do's and do nots. First one has to behave properly. Asan means properly sitting. Then there's the breathing process and withdrawing the mind from externals. Then meditation. So then first conceptualizing what is to be meditated upon. Then meditation, then full samadhi, absorption. So Vishnu is called yogi because he knows all these things. And of course he gives this process also. He's called yogi because he does meditation. We think of yogis in meditation. Yad yad atyarti shreshtas tata devete rojanaha. Sayat pramanam kurute lokas tadanuvartate. Krishna meditates to set an example to meditate, not that he needs to meditate. He himself is the very object of meditation. In this regard, I'm going to read from Srila Prabhupada's Krishna book, chapter 70, which is entitled Lord Krishna's Daily Activities. And Srila Prabhupada's extended explanation of why Krishna meditates on himself. It's described, it's actually from the Bhagavatam, that Krishna meditates on himself. So he sets an example that we should meditate, but we shouldn't meditate on ourselves. He meditates on himself, and we should meditate on him. I'm reading from Krishna book, chapter 70. An ideal householder should learn from the behavior of Lord Krishna how to rise early in the morning, however comfortably he may be lying in bed, embraced by his wife. After rising from bed, Lord Krishna would wash his mouth, hands, and feet, and would immediately sit down and meditate on himself. This does not mean, however, that we should also sit down and meditate on ourselves. We have to meditate upon Krishna, Radha Krishna. That is real meditation. Krishna is Krishna himself. Therefore, he was teaching us that Brahma Muhurta should be utilized for meditation on Radha Krishna. By such meditation upon himself, Krishna would feel very much satisfied. And similarly, we will also feel transcendentally pleased and satisfied if we utilize the Brahma Muhurta period to meditate on Radha and Krishna. And if we think of how Sri Rukmini Devi and Krishna acted as ideal householders to teach the whole human society to rise early in the morning and immediately engage in Krishna consciousness. There is no difference between meditating on the eternal forms of Radha Krishna and chanting the Mahamantra. Hare Krishna. As for Krishna's meditation, he had no alternative but to meditate on himself. The object of meditation is Brahman, Paramatma, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But Krishna himself is all three. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan. The localized Paramatma is his plenary partial expansion, and the all-pervading Brahman effulgence is the personal rays of his transcendental body. Therefore, Krishna is always one, and for him there is no differentiation. That is the difference between an ordinary living being and Krishna. For an ordinary living being, there are many distinctions. An ordinary living being is different from his body, and he is different from other species of living entities. A human being is different from other human beings and different from the animals. Even in his own body, there are different bodily limbs. We have our hands and legs, but our hands are different from our legs. The hand cannot act like the leg, nor can the leg act like the hand. The ears can hear, but the eyes cannot. And the eyes can see, but the ears cannot. All these differences are technically called swajatiya vijatiya. The bodily limitation whereby one part of the body cannot act as another part is totally absent from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There is no difference between his body and himself. He is completely spiritual, and therefore there is no difference between his body and his soul. Similarly, he is not different from his millions of incarnations and plenary expansions. Baladeva is the first expansion of Krishna. And from Baladeva expand Sankarshan, Vasudeva, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. From Sankarshan there is an expansion of Narayana. And from Narayana there is a second quadruple expansion of Sankarshana, Vasudeva, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. Similarly, there are innumerable other expansions of Krishna, but all of them are one. Krishna has many incarnations, such as Lord Nrisimha, Lord Boar, Lord Fish, and Lord Tortoise. But there is no difference between Krishna's original two-handed form, like that of a human being, and these incarnations of gigantic animal forms. Nor is there any difference between the action of one part of his body and that of another. His hands can act as his legs. His eyes can act as his ears. Or his nose can act as another part of his body. Krishna's smelling and eating and hearing are all the same. We limited living entities have to use a particular part of the body for a particular purpose, but there is no such distinction for Krishna. In the Brahma Sanghita it is said, Angani yasya sakalendriya vrittimanti. Krishna can perform the activities of one limb with any other limb. So, by analytical study of Krishna and his person, it is concluded that he is the complete whole. When he meditates, therefore, he meditates on himself. Self-meditation by ordinary men, designated in Sanskrit as soham, is simply imitation. Krishna may meditate on himself because he is the complete whole, but we cannot imitate him and meditate on ourselves. Our body is a designation superimposed upon ourself, the soul. Krishna's body is not a designation. Krishna's body is also Krishna. There is no existence of anything foreign in Krishna. Whatever there is in Krishna is also Krishna. He is therefore the supreme, indestructible, complete existence, or the supreme truth. Krishna's existence is not relative existence. Everything else but Krishna is a relative truth, but Krishna is the supreme absolute truth. Krishna does not depend on anything but himself for his existence. Our existence, however, is relative. For example, Only when there is the light of the sun, the moon, or electricity are we able to see. Our seeing, therefore, is relative, and the light of the sun and moon and electricity is also relative. They are called illuminating only because we see them as such. But dependence and relativity do not exist in Krishna. His activities are not dependent on anyone else's appreciation, nor does he depend on anyone else's help. He is beyond the existence of limited time and space, and because he is transcendental to time and space, he cannot be covered by the illusion of Maya, whose activities are limited. In the Vedic literature, we find that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has multipotencies. Since all such potencies are emanations from him, there is no difference between him and his potencies. Certain philosophers say, however, that when Krishna comes, he accepts a material body. But even if it is accepted that when he comes to the material world, he accepts a material body, it should be concluded also that because the material energy is not different from him, this body does not act materially. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said, therefore, that he appears by his own internal potency, Atma Maya. Krishna is called the Supreme Brahman because he is the cause of creation, the cause of maintenance, and the cause of dissolution. Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu, and Lord Shiva are different expansions of these material qualities. All these material qualities can act upon the conditioned souls, but there is no such action and reaction upon Krishna because these qualities are all simultaneously one with and different from him. Krishna is simply Satchidananda Vigraha, the eternal form of bliss and knowledge, and because of his inconceivable greatness, he is called the Supreme Brahman. His meditation on Brahman or Paramatma or Bhagavan is on himself only and not on anything else beyond himself. This meditation cannot be imitated by the ordinary living entity. So there's an extensive description. Srila Prabhupada goes into it in some detail, how Krishna, the yogi, meditates upon himself and how we should meditate on him as the Supreme Absolute Truth and not try to imitate him by meditating upon ourselves. And also Srila Prabhupada says we can meditate upon him by chanting Hare Krishna. More meanings of the name yogi. He brings together. So he brings the devotees to himself and he brings them to what they desire. And also he brings the demons to hell. They get what they deserve. Yoga gives the idea, it's something which is not easily obtainable to become adept in yoga. Even the physical yoga, which is it's doing exercises to get a healthy body, is not at all the aim of any yoga system, but it's misunderstood as such nowadays. But even that kind of yoga, it's not easy to do these yoga practices. But to do the real yoga and to get the siddhis or the concentration of the mind or the stillness of the mind, it's very, very, very difficult to get. The ultimate attainment for the yogis is to become liberated, to get moksha. And Vishnu is the one who gives moksha. He gives the results of all those who desire results from practicing yoga. Therefore, he's called yogi. Yoga can also mean the Lord of all wealth, by another Sanskrit derivation. Another meaning is that he knows fully all the sutras of grammar. Yoga sutras are well known nowadays among practitioners of yoga in the West, probably more than in India. There's also Paninis, for the grammar, Paninis sutras for understanding grammar, Sanskrit grammar, that means. Now, Patanjali is known as the compiler of the Yoga Sutras, but Patanjali is also the compiler of the Mahabhasha, or the most important commentary on the on Panini's sutras for understanding Sanskrit. And without commentaries, these sutras can't be understood. They have to be, sutra means the subject matter is packed in and it has to be unpacked again. The sutras are for memorization so that they can be remembered easily. But then, just like you may say E equals MC squared, you can say it, but you don't understand it, you haven't got a clue. You can say energy equals mass times the speed of light squared, but you know what it means and the real meaning of it unless you study physics very deeply. So in the same way, the sutras have to be unpacked. So Patanjali's Mahabharata, of course, the scholars, they say, well, maybe it's a different Patanjali, did the Yoga Sutras and did the Mahabhasha. Anyway, let the scholars say whatever they like. Traditionally, Patanjali is said to be an avatar of Adi Shesha. Another meaning of the name, yogi, he's the best medicine giver. Dhanvantari, the incarnation, the avatar of the Lord, gives medicine. So he join all the different ingredients together, give the medicine, and people will be cured. So there are a few meanings of the name yogi. Another way to glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All glories to Lord Sri Krishna, the best yogi of all. Let us meditate upon him. Hare Krishna. Vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindubhya evacha patitanam pavadebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Dante nitaya churnakam padayone patya kripa chakha kushatameta dahambravimi. Hey sadhava sakala eva vihaya durad gauranga chandra charne kurutanu ragaha. Parivaditu jano yata tata va nanumukharo navayam vichara yamaha. Hari rasamadira madati matta bhuvi vilutama nartama nirvishama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Rama.